Welcome to another episode of Growing Forward, a collaborative podcast between New Mexico Political Report and New Mexico PBS, where we look at cannabis in New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, a New Mexico PBS correspondent and on-air host with KUNM. I'm joined by my co-host, Andy Lyman, with New Mexico Political Report. We're pleased to have as our guest today, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. Governor, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Megan.
Governor Lujan Grisham, you signed the Cannabis Regulation Act earlier this month. It goes into effect on June 29th. How hands-on do you plan to be in the implementation of the Cannabis Regulation Act?
Excellent question. I've been pretty hands-on, given that I was part of the early negotiations in laying out a framework and making sure that public safety, underage, making sure that we protected the medical cannabis program and market, that the kinds of things that New Mexicans expect us to get right, that we got right and was really clear. I won't sign just any legalization bill. And the last part of that is got to have the strong social justice components. I did, however, as you know, step back until the very end of the legislative session, because this is an area that the country's worked to get right and that the state was a leader in terms of having the courage to say this needs to be a bona fide industry. And we have mentioned before the leadership and work of former Governor Gary Johnson, who really leaned into this before any policymaker had the courage to do that anywhere in the country. And I got involved again at this at the end of the session. I want the regulators to do their job as objective, independent regulators. I want them to do that with the engagement, direction, and support of the stakeholders who will be part of that committee that we have to establish by September. Now, my job is going to be to make sure that they stay on task, on track, that if there are problems that we didn't identify early on that are raised as a result, that I find vehicles to solve those problems and to make sure that we just keep this moving so that we're ready by April in the ways we've committed to being ready. So I think it's going to depend on my level of involvement based on that effort, but I have a great deal of faith in regulation and licensing and Superintendent Trujillo and the interest so far in the number of folks who want to participate in that committee work.
And that is April 2022, of course.
Correct. Not yes. Right now.
Yeah. The state's regulation and licensing department just put the call out to fill spots on the Cannabis Regulatory Advisory Committee. One of the caveats there is that by law, no one on that committee can be part of a cannabis company. Why do you think that limitation is important?
Well, we want to make sure that we don't end up with just the current folks engaged in cannabis production, to create a more narrow environment for their business activities. And with all due respect, we want their businesses to flourish as long as they meet the requirements and the rules and the licensing aspects of our cannabis law. But we don't want to limit the opportunities for folks who may not have yet thought about or have had a fair shot at getting involved in cannabis. One more thing to know about that. We have very effective relationships with our current medical cannabis companies and producers, and we know folks in the recreational business. Often it's the same company. So they're doing one thing in New Mexico, and as an example, two things in Colorado and two things in Arizona. Those relationships aren't going to diminish in this process. And you can still get us information by calling and writing and emailing. There's a number of ways to communicate with us, including even through the interim committee process with the legislature, without being part of this newly formed committee to be much more broad-based than that current level of expertise. So we don't want to minimize it, but we don't want to be too heavily reliant on one set of expertise moving forward.
Well, let me ask you a quick follow-up on that. One thing Andy and I found in talking to people in the industry for this podcast is that regulations are often crafted without their input. That's the way they felt anyway. Of course, there needs to be some distance between industry and regulators, right? But how can people with that expertise they've gained in being in this industry for years make sure they give that input? as the regulations being formed?
It's a very good question, Megan, and part of it clearly, before we finalize any rules with or without the statutory requirement to have a stakeholder group, we have to publish these rules, right? And we're going to do all of that. And we expect a robust return on information and advice that will, I have no doubt, correct areas that maybe we didn't get quite right in our regulatory approach on the front end. That will identify things we didn't think of that are huge opportunities that we'll get in and then put it back out for final review. And we think that that is, frankly, how we do most of our work in state government. It's how we got the best methane rule in the country. And I have no doubt more rules. So I think it's really important for your viewers today. This is not to discard that expertise. And if you do things in a vacuum, we won't do it right. I'm clear about that. I believe regulation and licensing is clear about that. So we want some distance from an industry that we have to have an objective oversight role with. But we want their expertise in making sure that we don't create a standard that minimizes a robust industry from being high quality and completely engaged at any number of levels in the state of New Mexico.
Shifting gears just a little bit, you also signed a bill for expungement for some marijuana-related crimes. There seems to be a lot of unknowns still about the implementation of that expungement law. What's the plan for your Department of Public Safety to make sure all these records are cleared?
So as you probably are aware, because I mentioned it at the press conference, that the Department of Public Safety initiated immediately. In fact, they were doing that work during the legislative session to identify how many records would qualify under the new law for expungement. And it's over 100,000 records. So now what they need to do is identify a process of review and for folks who aren't listed in that, make sure that they know a vehicle to get our attention. And then, as you know, we're required to send it to parties of interest, right? So the DAs, as an example, corrections departments. And if nobody objects, then we just then automatically expunge those records. So we have our own sort of safety check. I expect them to publish what that looks like, how they did that initial review to make sure that we shine a spotlight on that so it's completely transparent. I would guess in the next several weeks, they're hard at work getting that done. And of course, I want it done as early as possible because the sooner people are clear about who's in charge, how that looks, how long it will take before I could have my record expunged, the more folks that will benefit from that really important work. And I haven't seen anything from the department yet, but they know my expectations are pretty immediate.
Are they gonna have the resources to do it? That's a lot of records to clear.
No, they're gonna need a lot of partners. So we'll have to do that with the same way that we do in public safety with everyone. We're gonna have to leverage every public safety entity. And the way I think about it is the entire state is now cannabis deputized for the expungement of records. And it's gonna mean that we leverage, and there's not enough of them either, PDs, right? So public defenders, district attorneys, the attorney general's office, sheriffs and local police departments. And then when you make it local in that regard, I think you incentivize. If there isn't enough resources, look, this is important enough to get right. If somehow it's taking more work than we anticipated, or there's a delay, or it's slowed up, this is the kind of thing that we will front fund and work with the legislature. As you know, it's a priority of the legislature, this issue. And so I have no doubt that if we have a resource issue in terms of hiring more folks to help us, that we can get that done. And I have other folks in state government. And as we're ending the pandemic in the intensity that it initially was, right? 4,000 cases a day to, I hope it gets to that 150 level, 120 level and stays there. But anything that's at that 2 or 3% positivity rate, I now have some luxury to move state resources to do the administrative components and to support the Department of Public Safety. This is a priority. It's important to us to get this done quickly, efficiently, and effectively.
after the Cannabis Regulation Act goes into effect, the Department of Health's role in medical cannabis will be limited to just patient registry. And I'm not sure how many people would have guessed almost 15 years ago how much the medical cannabis program would grow. With what we know now, and given your experience leading the Department of Health, looking back at this, should RLD or regulation and licensing have had a role in this earlier?
You know, 2020 hindsight usually gives you that exact look back so you can say, this is how I would have done it. I don't know. I think timing is everything. And given that this is definitely a patient access issue, and that medical cannabis now we know has a significant role in substance abuse and addiction support, as well as other behavioral health, not only risks, but diagnoses. That is part of a larger behavioral health and public health initiative. And I still see incredible connections here, even though I agree that regulating it under one umbrella so that you don't have such different aspects. I still have this complaint about government. Still, federal government has three different sets of rules for the way in which they fund public health initiatives in children, youth, and families, human services, and the Department of Health. You look at all the different departments, which is why we have a children's cabinet that are working on children's issues or family issues, and they all do it a little bit differently because you do follow the framework, whatever your grant or statutory state statute or federal investment structure is. And it makes it arduous, expensive, confusing, and we want government to be streamlined and easy. So in that regard, I'm very happy about the direction that we're going. I don't know that we would have needed to change it until now, because without the bona fide side of the industry, it's even with 50,000 plus patients, that I don't think we saw, that we would see such a broad impact and aspect to use medical cannabis support for patients. Maybe we should have looked at that a decade ago and made some shifts. But no, I think I would have moved along pretty much in the same direction we have.
When the regular session began, the leading legalization proposal didn't have any production limits built in, but the bill that you signed allows regulation and licensing to put some limitations into place until 2026. And the reason Superintendent Trujillo ultimately gave for the temporary plant limit was to give a leg up for smaller producers. But early on, there was some talk about having too much cannabis. How concerned are you about ending up like Oregon, which saw a surplus of cannabis?
Concerned enough that while we do want that leg up for new producers, we really want this to be a benefit, a new industry for everyone. I mean, that's something that's really critical to the state. I think about even rural economic development. Cannabis is, I believe, can be a real game changer because you can do it from wherever you are. It doesn't require investments in that I-25 economic corridor. And that means, right, new healthcare, new schools, new opportunities in any number of ways, and even productive planned growth of our rural communities in the state. That I think is much overdue in terms of getting that right for such a rural frontier state like New Mexico. And so we want to make sure that that happens. But we were also very clear that other states before us have made significant mistakes. And you overproduce, you're contributing to a black market someplace else. And that is not only wholly inappropriate and ineffective, you cannot be an unwittingly, right, a participant in such a clearly negative environment. I think the combination of those two things put us in a position to really want to have a productive per capita, looking at the regional sales, identify a plant count, but then remove it in 2026 once you've stabilized an industry. It was really the best of both worlds, given what we've learned from other states' legalization programs.
After the law takes effect on June 29th, it will allow medical cannabis patients to buy and possess more cannabis than they have in the past. A number of producers have sent a letter to DOH. They're expressing concern that this, combined with production limits, could create a medical cannabis shortage. How would the state address this?
Yeah, I think it was really powerful that we identified that we could withhold up to 25% of the recreational cannabis product to make sure that we don't end up in a situation where patients lose access to their medicine. That is a critical aspect. I don't know that what has been identified as a concern is a real prediction for what will occur, but rather we were put on notice early on that you don't want to find yourself in that situation. So give yourself a tool to do that. So, you know, maybe we only have to do the 10%, which I think most folks are thinking is going to be the right set aside. But no, we have the authority to go to 25% because we'll have some unknowns in this first year. I would argue even in 24 months. In my conversation with governors and policymakers in Oregon and Colorado, for example, lots of things that they didn't expect occurred within those first 24 months. We've tried to give ourselves the regulatory fluidity and flexibility to deal with those issues without having to go back to the legislature, but with the legislature's full support, because they know right what those authority levels can and ought to be in regulation and licensing. So I think that we're going to be prepared. I really do.
You, along with I think 20 other governors, signed a letter to Congress asking them to pass the Safe Banking Act, which they did, and now it's onto the Senate. If this passes, though, this would sort of chip away at the current federal prohibition of cannabis. Can you tell us why this is important to New Mexico?
Well, it's important to every state that's engaged in both medical cannabis and has moved to make sure that we are creating cannabis as a bona fide industry. It probably isn't news to your viewers that particularly in the early days, you couldn't bank anywhere. It was all cash industry. And that even as recent as 2 years ago, we were having product interrupted and confiscated in the medical cannabis program by federal authorities. So that's not the banking issue per se, but until the feds get their arms around, this is an industry in the United States that requires the same oversight tools and support so that you can bank productively, that you can make investments, if it's not all cash transactions, that you can make deposits in a more normalized context. States, including this one, have found, you know, several workarounds, but they're still complex. And without that federal shift, we are, again, creating vehicles to solve these problems. But in the end, they're not as secure as they need to be. So it's really important that the Senate does this and solves many of those challenges that states as innovators have, you know, figured, like I said, a way around. But we would rather have this work like any other business. It also minimizes big business mistakes and problems that could prevent them from staying in a bona fide industry. And we don't want that.
There's currently a case pending at the New Mexico Supreme Court over medical cannabis and gross receipts taxes. I've written about this extensively, so I won't go over all the specifics. But for our viewers and listeners who weren't aware, a few years back, a medical cannabis producer requested a deduction of its gross receipts taxes, arguing that recommendations and for medical cannabis are essentially the same as prescriptions for pharmaceutical drugs. The state's taxation and revenue department countered that if recommendations and prescriptions were the same, the legislature would have said so. Further, the state also argued that if the legislature intended to make GRT deductible from medical cannabis sales, it would have. So flash forward to where we are now. The Cannabis Regulation Act specifies that GRT can be deducted from medical cannabis sales. Can you explain from the state's perspective why it's important to pursue this case, even though the State Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the producer?
We want to be careful that we don't have liabilities that go backwards. I mean, part of my job, even if sometimes philosophically, I might find myself certainly in the position of the patient and the producer. Medical cannabis is medicine. And in the spirit of that, I certainly agree with folks who challenge that idea. But it is also true that in terms of taxes, it better be clear for those exemptions in the law This is an area where clarity rules, because otherwise you have a department that is guessing based on what they think legislative intent is or isn't. You would put a department in a position to be challenged for making arbitrary and capricious decisions all the time as they were guessing or taking the side of a particular taxpayer. And I agree with the department's view that they can't be viewed as that, can't be seen as that, and we have liabilities looking back. Because of the spirit of that issue, you'll notice that the state has embraced moving forward, we'll have that clarity. And that's why we're still in litigation, and I am hopeful that that all gets resolved soon.
You alluded to this, but what sort of conversations prior to signing the Cannabis Regulation Act did you have with other governors of states that had already legalized?
I had more conversations with folks in Colorado during the time that we were, so Governor Polis and I are close enough that we're checking in on not just border states, but so we're close, but on the pandemic, that it was an easy, natural extension to talk a little bit about their cannabis experience. When we were in the debates in front of committees about plant count, I reached out to Oregon, as did my team. So Dominic Gabello, who was leading a lot of that policy work with Superintendent Trujillo, and they really stressed hard that, to Andy's point, if you could do a historical look back, what would you do differently? They said unequivocally, this got us into a lot of trouble, particularly in states like ours, they were pointing to, where we believe there's a lot of pent-up interest in cannabis. And so you get folks who are actively growing, ready to go, we've got lots of land, folks, we're going to have probably the highest Native American interest in cannabis growing and production in the country. And you don't want to overproduce. And it's an easy thing to fix if you've got flexibility, not so easy if you don't think about it on the front end. So we also worked with, I didn't directly, but my team worked with all of the states by making sure they looked at their best practices, their regulatory systems, and we had meaningful conversations, and we'll continue that as we move forward. We don't need to reinvent the wheel here. What we need to do is have a meaningful program that's unique to New Mexico, but doesn't redo, right? Make the same mistakes that have been made already in other states. We have the benefit from learning from that, and you bet that we're going to put that into our execution of this effort and plan.
What sort of advice would you give governors and legislatures who might be trying to do this and follow our example?
I'm not getting a little paranoid that you guys are listening to my phone calls. So I had a conversation either yesterday or the day before with Connecticut's governor, Ned Lamont. And his issue was, how do you get the legislature when there are so many issues between, the criminal justice or social justice side of things and protecting medical cannabis and launching legalization? I'm finding that it's such a big undertaking that I can't keep the legislature all together. And I certainly can't get it bipartisan enough. And I said, while we didn't, in the end, have this sort of bipartisan voting, we've had strong bipartisan investment. You've got lots of former Republican policymakers in New Mexico's medical cannabis industry. You've got current Republican legislators who had their own bills, whose ideas got into, but they should have. They had real merit, particularly in the intoxication investment and innovation and making sure that public safety is prepared and that we're doing the investments in training law enforcement officers. All of that got into this bill. So I've already been reaching out and talking to governors about what I think you need to do. And my biggest advice was, don't launch into a legislative session without having a year at least to really talk with your stakeholders and your legislators about garnering expertise. It's a complex set of issues. And I did say that I thought it was really smart to separate the bills so that you've got a social justice, one's contingent upon another, so that you've got motivation to move them both, that they're significant together, but putting that all in one new industry approach, I think is problematic. And it's one of the reasons we had to call the special session here. And frankly, Senator Ivy Soto designed that framework in the last week or so of the session, and getting it drafted and separated, that's what took that extra time. We just ran out of time. It's a smart structural design for policymakers, and it engages everyone where they are. And I believe that Governor Lamont is going to try exactly that strategy.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule to speak with us, Governor.
Yeah, Andy and Megan, you're very welcome. And I want to end with something I stole from Tripp. I was going to give him zero credit because that's what governors do, but I'm going to give him credit. We were talking about innovation. And, you know, New Mexico could be the chili cannabis-infused product of the world. And I love that you smile when you hear that, but it is the kind of thing that would be iconic for a state like this. And there's so many places where we really can lead the country and the world in incredible new ways to utilize and use cannabis. And I'm really excited for a brand new industry in the state that has many folks at all ages, all experience levels, interested and excited about this new economic opportunity. And that's a game changer in New Mexico. So thank you for having me today.
This was Growing Forward, a collaboration between New Mexico Political Report and New Mexico PBS. You can find other episodes by searching for Growing Forward wherever you normally find your podcasts. Don't forget to leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Special thanks to our producers, Kevin McDonald and Bryce Dix. Our theme music is by Christian Bjorklund, and our logo was created by Catherine Connolly.